So the topic for today's class is the time for our completion. And I don't know if you've been touched by what might be the very last words that Baba ever spoke through Tadi Kulzar's body, right? Do you all remember the 31st of December? And Baba's meeting on the 31st of December? And Baba called this year the year of completion. And when Baba spoke those words, I didn't realize it might be the last time Baba ever comes in Dadi Gulzar's body. He may come again, but he may not. But I do know that when I heard that, it really deeply touched me. That this time it feels like Baba is pretty serious. And so I thought, you know, what does it mean to talk about completion? What is completion? Because we know that for the drama to be complete, there are many things that need to come together. There is the completion of the part that other souls have to play. As we know, there are many souls in the world who are in positions of authority, positions of influence, scientists, you know, many souls have to complete their role for completion to take place. At the same time, we also know that nature has a very big part to play in completion. So nature has to be ready too. But God's eyes are only on us. And Baba says it's time for you to become complete. And the year of completion can only be achieved if you play your part accurately. So there are so many words that are synonymous to completion. You know, many people in the Brahmin family say completion means becoming karmatit. Completion means becoming completely uninfluenced, unaffected. Being in the body and yet totally jivan mukt, liberated in life. So I was very touched yesterday when I heard Dr. Nirmala say to somebody in response to someone's question, and her words were that I think the question was about the way we deal with people now. You know, as we know, problems are increasing in the Brahmin family, outside the Brahmin family. And somebody asked her about karma, how not to create more karma. Because one thing is not to try to clean up our old karma, right? But another thing is not to create more karma. It's no point cleaning and dirtying at the same time. We're not going to get anywhere. And Didi's response was never to give sorrow to anyone. It's very deep, isn't it? Never to give sorrow to anyone. At the same time, I also heard her saying, you still have to stay in your family, your workplace, your environment, continue with service, continue with your responsibilities, continue doing what you have to do. And she elaborated on not giving sorrow by saying, not even one thought of mine should be a thought of sending negative vibrations, sorrow, to anyone. So it's quite a clear definition of the karmatit stage to me. Not accumulating more sorrow in any way, and then maintaining that state for a long period of time. So I've always wondered, you know, what will we all be like when we reach our state of completion? What do you think? Can you imagine all of us in this room, maybe 60, 70 people? What would we look like? How would we behave? What would our faces be like when we reached a place of completion? Angels. Light. Yeah, just as they show the deities, you know. So for me, the word that came up in a very big way, you know, it's, you could use whatever word you like, but it's just the word love. Whether you say mercy, or you say compassion, or you say love, I think at the end, every soul will become so loving. Loving doesn't mean not powerful. You know, but it's, love is a power in itself. And when the soul reaches that point of complete love, nothing affects my love. Nothing affects the energy that comes out of me. There are no locks, no blocks, no barriers. And there's no chance that the flow of love can be stopped in any way. So for me, this was maybe the state of completion. And I'll give you a little formula. I've been thinking of this during my trip in Madhuban, but the formula for love, okay? It's easy. So it's called the ABCD of love. So the first part of this formula of love is A, which stands for acceptance. It's an easy word, maybe not so easy to practice, but the ability to accept every scene in drama without resistance. Baba calls the resistance why, how, what. You know, when you ask questions, it's resistance usually, isn't it? I don't really want it to be that way, but it is that way. I don't really want a person to be that way. I want them to be better. Why are they like this? So that's kind of resistance, isn't it? It's a resistance to accepting things the way they are. And so, behind love, behind being able to show any love to anyone, firstly comes acceptance. If I haven't accepted you, your part, your role, and everything you're doing today, it's very hard to say that what I express towards you is true love. Usually it means that there will be some mixture, right? There'll be a mixture of either a desire, like I accept you, but I want you to change this habit, you know, just one habit, so then it's not full acceptance. Or we could say, you know, I do accept you, but for your sake, I wish you wouldn't be like this. It's not, doesn't affect me, but for your sake, you know. Or, you know, when we start to put the ifs and buts. So the acceptance is not complete acceptance. And it's almost like I'm playing games with myself. I do accept them conditionally. There is no such thing as conditional acceptance. So the first pillar on which love stands is acceptance. And then the second pillar, the B, AB, yeah, is belonging. You know, we can accept people and hold them at a distance. I accept them. They can stay in their country and I'm in my country. And I accept everything they do. Because I have nothing to do with them. I don't have a connection with them. So they can be them, I can be me, and the world continues very happily. Is that true? Is that love? So a very beautiful definition of the Golden Age is a place of oneness. you know, what makes us so happy in the golden age, makes us united, is the fact that we see no differences. I always wondered how Brahma Baba managed to keep 300 women together. They never fought. You know, and I think one of the big things that they had in their awareness was, we belong together. We belong to one family. And 300 people is not a lot. At the moment on this campus, there must be about 300 people, I think. You know? And if you were to meet the same 300 people every day, 365 days in a year, there's no escape. So, belonging. Belonging is, you know, there's a deep link between our paths. The journey has been together. The journey will end together. None of us are going to go home until we're all ready to go home. You know, it's not like the bell will ring for a part of the Brahmin family, and then another bell for another part of the Brahmin family, and another bell, you know. When we go, it'll be together. Baba says a swarm of mosquitoes, you know. And so really love means that there must be a thread of connection. And in the Laukic world, the thread of connection is bodily, isn't it? You know, we call it my child, my family, my country, my religion, my culture. So I've created a thread of belonging. I belong to this. But in Baba's belonging, it's a very big belonging. And actually, when you're truly soul conscious, everybody belongs to you, and you belong to everybody. And I think this is the reason why many pure souls, including our daddies, are loved so much. You know, somebody who's been in Dhyan 50 years, and somebody who's visiting Madhuban for the first time, you seat them in front of Daddy and they have the same feeling. She loves me so dearly. She values me so dearly. She gives me a sense of belonging, connectedness. So, apart from just accepting people, the connection. You know, how do they belong to me? How do I belong to them? And of course, Baba teaches us the highest way of belonging to each other, which is not just limited to the Brahmin family, but everyone in the world. You know, it's soul consciousness. True soul consciousness means we belong. We did belong. We do belong. We will always belong. Body consciousness is nothing but the block to belonging. So then the C. John A, John B, and now the C of love. You know, what's the C of love? So, you know, many times you could say, okay, I accept a person. They do belong to this world of souls, you know, the family of souls. But there's a third part, a very practical part, and it's called care. It's actually doing something for people. Even if the doing is just through the mind. You know, we hear stories of how Brahma Baba would stay awake at night. Do you remember what he used to do at night? He would send vibrations to the world. Send vibrations to wake up souls that were still sleeping, that had a very big part to play. Sometimes he would send vibrations to the mothers. He had so much love for the mothers, didn't he? The mothers in bondage. Especially when he heard that somebody was going through a difficult time. There was nothing he could do physically, but he cared. You know, he had deep care, deep love in his heart. And so he used to send power and sakash and vibrations to those souls. Stay awake at night. He probably wondered, what can I do for them? How can I show my care? And I think when there is true love, then the expression of the true love is actually to do something, to care. Otherwise I can say, you know, I accept you, and I know we belong, and so, fine. You live your life, and I'll look after myself. Is that really love? It's not really, is it? And we often hear in the Murali too, charity begins at home. You know, whether you live in a Lokic home, whether you live in a center, wherever you live, part of any community, the expression of love is to care. And if I can't even care to ask someone, are you okay? Is everything all right? You know? Then it might be time to ask oneself, where is the love? Because I just feel like as the Brahmin family is progressing and we're coming closer and closer to the end, I mean, we're going to have to care a lot for each other. You know, people's bodies are becoming older. We haven't really seen much natural calamity hitting the Brahmin family as yet, have we? Few places, few incidences, but I think when things really start to become quite difficult, when we have situations of violence and war, how much are we going to have to care for each other? And it's not just us. I mean, we're going to have to care for the world. But we might find ourselves in places where it's just me and you. So acceptance, belonging, care. Care from the mind. Be very careful of the words you speak, you know, especially in today's day and age. It's not the time to make mistakes through our words. People are sensitive. The same thing that you said that way, you could say it this way, you know? So if you do make mistakes through your words, it's the time now to really deeply reflect and say, well, how could I say it more carefully next time? And then the last is the care through action, you know, to demonstrate care. I heard a story once of somebody who visited Germany maybe 2 decades ago. And this person was on work. It was a work trip, but he wanted to stay in the center because it was Bhog the next day. So they had cleaned the whole center on Wednesday. And the soul was working all day. And he came back to the center very late at night. It must have been like 9 p.m. And so the only person around to greet him was Sudeshman. Everyone had gone to bed, they'd cleaned the kitchen, cleaned the center, all done. And they forgot, in fact, that he was even coming. But Sudeshman remembered. And as he walked in the door, she said, "Om Shanti, brother, welcome home, you know. Are you hungry? You must be hungry, you've been out working all day." So he said, "Yeah, I am actually. And I'll go shower and I'll come down and then eat something." Apparently, she didn't tell him that there was no food in the kitchen. Everything had been finished. So you know what she did? She started to cook some dal, some vegetables, and by the time he came down, after 10-15 minutes, she was making the chapatis. She didn't even hint that there was no food and maybe you can just have some bread and jam. You know? So, what kind of quality care is that? You know, that soul was so deeply touched that somebody could go out of their way to start to cook a meal for me at 9 p.m. when most people would say, you know what, I've had a really difficult day and I didn't even know you were going to come so late. So, can you just help yourself? But this is love in action, you know, this care. And we all know what it feels like to be cared for. And so demonstrating care to others. And the fourth pillar of love, you know, the D, A, B, C, D, it's a word we know very well. It's always connected with the word love in Baba's language. love and detachment. And detachment is the most beautiful way of showing love and showing respect to any soul. Because as much as we may have good wishes for someone, we may have a plan for their life and what we think they should do and what should be done to them. But ultimately, to respect any soul, Brahmin or not, means to be able to know when to step out, when to step in, when to step out, how much to step in, how much to step out, to get the maximum result. Maximum result of connectivity and love. Sometimes we think that by doing more or saying more or controlling more, it's actually helping. But it doesn't always work that way, does it? You know, sometimes in our lives I think the greatest help for me especially has been when people just say to me, I trust you. I know you'll work things out for yourself. And then they step out. Because to give souls space, you know, give them space to work on themselves, space to understand themselves, they should know that you're there for them, but not feel that there is any form of imposition, you know? So the ABCD of becoming a loving soul, you know, the A was acceptance, the B is a state of belonging with anyone, the C is care, through mind, through words, through body, and the D, detachment, to be there for everyone, but not to invade, to intrude. And if these four things are balanced, every relationship would be a relationship of extreme love, complete love. Don't you think? So when Baba's asking us to come to our place of our own completion, first we have to know what the completion looks like. We have to have some kind of image in our mind. This is where I'm going to reach. This is what I'm going to look like, not physically, but internally. Because if you don't have a vision and you don't have an aim and you don't have an objective in your mind for yourself, you know, I found my ABCD. You've got to find yours. Maybe it's an XYZ. Yeah? You've got to find what you look like when you're complete. And Baba named this as the year of completion. I don't think he meant it's completion of other people's work. It's completion of our work. And I personally asked Dr. Nirmala, you know, what do you think Baba meant by the year of completion? And she said it's probably going to be the last year for us to make effort. You know, because when things do go wrong and things start to go up and down, you're so busy managing what's happening on the ground. Can you imagine having a bomb strike 100 meters away from where you live? You know, imagine all the things that you have to start to get involved in, and, you know, the intellect does get engaged. And so we're not saying that you're not having yoga. You may be able to maintain Baba in the background of the mind, but to do deep focused effort, the effort that requires introspection, the effort that requires us to process what's going on inside and then burn away with seed stage yoga what needs to be erased. There may not be time for all of that. So we're lucky we came to Madhuban in March, actually. You know, January, February, March. I think these souls have been very lucky. Because we heard Baba's last few words on the 31st of December. And he's given us a very good plan for the coming year. And the other thing that Baba touched on, which is almost like a methodology for our completion. He mentioned three things. Sorry, I'm not even going to go as far as December now. I'm going to go to February. when Baba sent a message to Daddy Gulzar. Do you remember? And I was here in February just for that week when the teacher's retreat was on. And I still remember Nirvairbhai sitting on stage, and it was actually the welcome session. And everyone was talking about the retreat and welcome to Madhuban, etc. And the first thing Nirvairbhai started to talk about was, this morning Baba pulled Daddy Gulzar at 3 o'clock in the morning. And you know, the same intellect, the Daddy's not well at the moment, she can't process things correctly, she's so weak, the mind and the body. And yet, when Baba needs to get a message through, Baba gets a message through. And the three things he said, do you remember them? I can't forget them. The first thing was, it's a methodology for our completion. Yeah? Have powerful Amrit Vela. It was so clear. Everybody, don't have Amrit Vela. Have powerful Amrit Vela. And what was Baba trying to say there? You know, what does powerful Amrit Vela do? Seed stage yoga at Amrit Vela. You know, it's a process of very deep cleansing. Any way to wake up from Amrit Vela is to take power. We know that. To have yoga at any time in the day is powerful. But seed stage yoga, which is the most powerful yoga at Amrit Vela, it's like a double whammy, isn't it? It's a very deep laser light that cleanses. Obviously, God knows that there's a lot to be cleaned out still. And so it's almost like He is saying to us, if you want to get to your state of completion, let me do the work for you. Possibly it's too much for us to do for ourselves. So use my light, use my power. Have that deep state of consciousness, connectedness with me, and allow my light to do the cleaning at Amrit Vela. So, my advice to everyone would be, do whatever you need to have powerful Amrit Vela. If you need to play songs, play songs. If you need to sit on a chair, sit on a chair. If you need to sit on the floor, sit on the floor. Do anything. If you need to hear the birds singing, sit with the birds. Anything that helps to switch you into deep yoga stage. Make a plan for everyday powerful Amrit Vela. Because out of 365 days, I think we have less than 300 days left. Yeah? Time every day is ticking. So, the second part of Baba's methodology was very practical, very sensible. Make sure you have enough. If you know what you've got stored away, you don't worry, right? If you know you've got enough, whatever it is, you know, milk or sugar or rice or dal, or you know that's one thing taken care of. You know you've done your best. Now for God to tell us in February 2018, make sure you're stocked up. There's some very deep message happening behind that. And already we've seen in the first months of Him saying that, you know, how many difficulties due to the weather have occurred, especially in the Western Hemisphere, you know. Europe, the UK, parts of America went through so much cold weather. And when that happens, the first thing you think about is food and water. Have we got enough? If that's taken care of, that's a big chunk of everything taken care of. And it was really lovely that the first day after the welcome, we had a green day. I'm not sure if many of you were here for the green day. And Brother Golo did a lovely presentation, you know, on what to stock up and different websites that can give you information. It's very practical. But I think what it also does is it frees up the intellect. You know you've stocked up to your best ability. And Mohini Ben, I think it was the same night, around that time anyway, she did a lovely Skype call with all of us. And she said, okay, you can look at the outer stocks and get them right, but what about the inner stock? Have you stocked up on enough practical sense, practical power, to be able to use it at the end? And she gave a very nice little example, one line, but I caught it, because I've never thought of this before. She said, if people come asking for food, you know, you can always feed them popcorn. Was anyone there when she said that? I didn't realize popcorn's quite filling. And it's very easy to make. You know, and if you have a few big bags, a few kilos of popcorn seeds, you know, corn seeds, you can feed an army with popcorn. And it must be healthy as well. So, you know, think through these things and you'll be prepared. So Amrit Vela is the time for power. You know, getting your stocks correct. Be prepared. And the third thing Baba says, does anyone remember? Huh? Yeah, it's not to have conflict now. He said, settle all your past conflicts. Any conflict with anyone, settle it. Whether it means to go to the person and sort it out, I think what it means more to me is completely sort it out in here. And for me, the methodology to sort it out is the ABCD. Can I accept the soul? Do they belong to me? Is there that feeling of belonging? Would I care for the soul if the soul needed it? Or would I say, I really do accept you, you do belong, but hands off. I really don't feel like looking after you or feeding you any food or taking care of you. And am I detached enough to say, I love you unconditionally and allow you to get on with your journey? And that journey is the best thing for that soul. If I can apply the A, B, C, D honestly to anyone, then it means there is no more barrier, defense mechanism, block, lock in my mind towards them. Then there can never be conflict. Right? Does that make sense? So Baba said very clearly, resolve all your conflicts. So it might be worth doing that little bit of homework and asking yourself, do I have conflict with anyone? If they have conflict with you, it's probably because one of the A, B, C, D are not quite functioning properly. Because if I were completely loving and completely giving in an unconditional way, you know, with absolutely no blocks, no barriers, then the soul would feel that. The, you know, souls pick up more on your vibrations, your energy, than what you say. That's why they say in English, at least, you know, when anyone meets, it's more the way they made you feel that you take away than what they said. Some people don't say a lot, but they make you feel very comfortable. So back to completion, you know. Back to where am I today? And what work do I need to do to get to that place of completion? What's the homework? And what's the action plan to get to that state of completion? So, I know that in a lot of the past Avyak Muralis, Baba's been taking up, you know, the topic of being givers in an unlimited way. And he talks about it with different language. But I think, you know, whenever there is that feeling of a little bit of resistance in giving, another word that we could use is selfishness. You know, the flow of energy from me is not totally selfless. Then it might be a way of, or it might be a moment to pause and ask yourself, why is that feeling of blocked energy coming up? Because somebody said, when I asked, you know, what does completion look like? And they said, it's like an angel. And we all know that, don't we? Before we become deities, we have to go through a period of being an angel. What is an angel? An angel is one whose energy of mercy and love is just forever, like a fountain. At that point in time, I won't think about myself at all. Do I have enough for me? What you might do to me? How you might press my buttons? Whether what you're doing is right or wrong? Whether you should or shouldn't be doing what you're doing? Or, you know, whether you should have said that to me 20 years ago? There won't be any of that. That's not the angel, is it? So the practical angel, being able to be so giving in every possible way to souls. Not giving where I dump what I want to say on them. No, it's not a dumping game. It's not a preaching game. It's not a teaching game. It's a game of giving very pure energy and put in the simplest way in God's language, you know, good wishes, pure feelings. And this is really our homework now, isn't it? It's the checking, the attention, the checking, the changing. You know, first pay very deep attention, accurate attention to what's going on. Not so much in your thinking only, but in your feeling. The minute your feelings start to shake, do you know when your feeling starts to become a little bit uncomfortable? Do you all know that point? When you start to go, not feeling good about this person, you know? Or you can sense a little bit of resistance or discomfort. Do you all know that point in yourself? Where you go from being really peaceful and Om Shanti to, I'm not so sure. Yeah? That's that point of attention. If I'm paying attention, I know when my energy is shifting. And at that point, it's time to ask questions. Not about them, but to talk to myself. What's going on? Where in the ABCD formula have I started to perhaps drop one of those letters? And how to come back to a state of, you know, of feeling full and of giving the change. So attention, checking, and then change is nothing but reset. You know? Resetting, coming back to that place of, I won't even call it neutrality, but a state of fullness. And I think if all of us could just make that little bit of extra effort this year, the methodology that Baba has given, and that inner deep checking to maintain feelings of goodness, love, mercy, whatever word you like, in an unconditional way towards everyone. I heard something very nice, I can't remember who gave the class, but they said, I think it was Mohini Ben again, you know, the power of discernment will be very useful at the end, won't it? Not the power of being judgmental. I've thought a lot about that. You know, to discern someone's behavior, to discern who to give a certain job to, means to know the person, isn't it? To know sanskaras, to use people to their best ability, to use myself to my best ability. But to be judgmental? Completely different. Whereas discernment is empowering and uplifting, to be judgmental is to be critical and defaming, isn't it? So very important to sharpen the intellect to a place of very good discernment, decision-making power. If you don't have that, how are we going to survive the end? Baba calls it a very clear line, isn't it? A line that is completely based on faith, completely based on cleanliness, you know, honesty with God. But it's not a line that's judgmental of others or judgmental of myself. So I know how to discern right and wrong, but maintaining an attitude of complete upliftment or benefit for every soul. So being loving, being detached, and being very clear thinkers, clear in our discernment power. This is, I think, where we're headed if we do our honest homework and we get to that place of completion. Okay, so we've got 15 minutes left. Any questions or any comments? I'm sure you've all been here as long as I have, probably the last 10 days or so, and you've heard a lot, and you know, we've had that lovely banner upstairs on the stage from Om to Om Shanti. Om Shanti is the completion. You know, it's the closure. Om is the beginning, isn't it? I am. And when from being I am, I come to a place of I am at peace. Not I, the soul, am peace. I am at peace with everything. I'm at peace with myself. I'm at peace with my past. I'm at peace with my journey. I'm at peace with everyone around me. I'm at peace with the effort I've made, and I'm at peace with my future. To be totally at peace. It's different, isn't it, to be peaceful and to be at peace. It means everything is good. It's all good. That's Om Shanti. So before you leave on Madhuban, see if, even if it's just a few hours that you have left or a day, you know, see if you can try to come to that place of Om Shanti and just create the memory of what it feels like to be Om Shanti. It's like I'm at peace with the whole world. I'm at peace with the cycle. I'm even at peace with God. He's played his role, he's done his bit, and I've done the best to complete my bit. Okay, so questions, comments? No, don't become Om Shanti now. It's talking time. Anyone? All right.
I apologize to you two for coming late. This is a wonderful talk. Don't you think it was a lovely talk? And the last thing you said was the most important, to be at peace. Because, to be honest, there were a few little things that were troubling me. But now you've given me the solution. So to actually be at peace with all of that would be great, would be wonderful. So I'm leaving tomorrow morning. So, like you said, just a few hours to work on being at peace. Thank you so much.
Well done, Jamila. Anyone else? Questions, comments? You're all at peace with everything? Really? Honestly?
Спасибо, конечно, большое. Мне ваша лекция очень понравилась. У меня вот такой вопрос. Как все-таки стараться не причинять никому страдания?
Заранее спасибо.
She's saying thanks a lot for this wonderful talk. And my question is, How not to give sorrow to anyone? You touched that a little bit. Can you just explain that?
Actually, I think many times sorrow is a cumulative thing. You know, when you meet someone new... Gosh. Sasha's doing a great job, isn't he? It's in two places at one time. So I think sorrow might actually be a bit of a cumulative thing, you know. When you meet somebody new, meet them for the first time, say they make a little mistake or they do something that you don't quite understand. Usually we go, oh, well, maybe they're from a different culture, you know. Our heart is very big towards them. And we find good reasons for why their behavior is like that, you know. We try to understand them, yeah? We try to be nice with them. And now, the person who you live with, who you've been telling, don't do that. Maybe you've said that 1,000 times to them, and then they make the same mistake. You know? So our attitude has shifted a little bit. They're no longer a new person. Expectations have gone up. So I think so it's not like we give sorrow to each other the first time we meet each other. We learn to take sorrow. And sorrow is not necessarily words that are spoken and actions. I think sorrow comes from a deep attitude, and a vibration that's embedded behind the action. So when it comes to giving sorrow, because there's two aspects to sorrow, there's the giving and the taking. So when it comes to giving sorrow, if I have given sorrow to someone, and I'm just talking about my experience, I always reflect on not the words I spoke, but the attitude I spoke them with. Because often, you know, you can speak very nicely, but it doesn't go down very well. You can even choose the words, because you know it's a very sensitive person. It still doesn't work. Because the feelings you had inside you were not aligned to the A, B, C, D. Right? Somewhere there was some force. Something wasn't quite aligned to complete love. So when it comes to giving sorrow to others, I think it comes back to my own deep checking of what was my intention, what was my attitude, not so much what were the words. And if truly somebody says, look, you gave me sorrow through this action, and I didn't mean it, then it's very easy to go back and say, I'm really sorry, there was no intention of doing that. You know, and the love in my attitude and my feelings and my energy, my vibrations, it will reach them. It will reach them. And if there's a difficult karmic account, we all, I'm sure, have been through that. An account that seems like it'll never go away, it'll never shift. Anyone have one of those? Yeah. One of those karmic accounts. It just never seems to shift. It just means you need a more cumulative effect of love. Very deep love, pure love in the energy you're sending towards that soul always. I mean, there's one person in my life currently who I don't think I have bad feelings for the soul, but she really doesn't like me. She really doesn't like me. And she makes it very clear. And I see her almost every day. She doesn't live with me, but... So every time I see her, she reminds me that she doesn't like me. Because she'll either ignore me, or she'll make it a point to say good morning to me very, you know, but very happily to somebody else, you know. So, but I just keep thinking how loving that soul is. And I know she can be. And remember that everybody, no matter who it is ultimately responsible for their behavior. And sometimes souls are going through something inside, you know? They've got their own internal processes that they need to sort out. So love is also patience. And it's allowing people to take their time. So, you know, sometimes you may do that deep checking and realize there isn't anything in my heart, then just give it time. And in that time, keep accumulating, you know, good wishes towards the soul. When it comes to taking sorrow, because you never give sorrow unless you've taken sorrow. There's only one reason we take sorrow, and that's the good old word, three-letter word, ego. It's only my ego that takes sorrow, there's nothing else. Ego means my false identity. I, the soul, at peace, tiny point of light, can take no sorrow, because nobody can do me any harm. As soon as I come out of the place of being at peace, and there is any form of expectation or desire or false identity, then there will be sorrow. If not today, then tomorrow. And the minute I've taken a little bit of sorrow into myself, I will give it out. So just maybe having that awareness of not allowing sorrow to accumulate in your heart anymore, and then being very cautious that, you know, every interaction with every human being ends with understanding and love. You know, trying not to leave any interaction kind of half-half. Yeah? Sometimes we feel like, oh, there's no time to finish this off, you know. Or I don't know what to do, you know. But just try to finish everything in a place of being at peace, Om Shanti. And finally, all I can say is patience. Just patience, patience, patience. Patience with ourselves, because we're bound to make a few mistakes. But also patience with others as they are processing their stuff. And they may take sorrow, even though I don't mean to give it. Is that okay? Okay, last question maybe, and then we can have a little bit of meditation, traffic control. My introduction, so the name is Sona, and originally this body is, as it looks like, Indian, but I didn't grow up for most of my life in India. I grew up in various countries around the world, including Hong Kong, Italy, UK, South America, Chile, and I did spend some of my teenage years in India, which was very good, because that's the time when my parents came to Baba in the mid-1980s. So we had to come, after all our travels abroad to India, settle down here, to finally be introduced to Baba. And I was quite young, I was mid-teenager at the time. But you know, when Baba's seed is planted inside the soul, nothing can remove it. So I was lucky enough to have parents who put the seed in and then just left me alone. And then I have a very strange twist to my story. So I never wanted to surrender in an Indian center, because I never wanted to wear a sari and have long black hair. I was very young, very modern, you know, brought up overseas. So I couldn't imagine myself being a BK sister ever. So I told my mother and father that I wanted to get married and lead a normal life. I wanted nothing more to do with this organization. They were very good. They're really loving and very detached, and said, fine. And but then I got married and I went to Australia very soon afterwards. And myself and my husband came to Baba the very next day through my father's friends who took us to the center. So finally became a Brahmin in Australia about 25 years ago. So it took me 7 years, from my teenage years to early 20s, to be able to actually accept Brahmin life. But I guess everyone goes through their process. So then I lived in Australia for 14 years, and now the last just over 10 years in Abu Dhabi. I'm sure many of you fly over Abu Dhabi. Is that correct? Over Dubai or Abu Dhabi, when you come to Madhavan, anyone who comes from the West usually flies over the Middle East. So, yeah, I've been running the center in Abu Dhabi now for 10 years. And we have a wonderful group of many Muslim students, amongst others. And, you know, it's lovely when you can break any past blocks you might have about any culture and serve the souls with complete love. So because I'm very close by to Madhavan and, you know, luckily I can speak Hindi and English, so I guess I'm useful to the yajna during the season. And I'm very happy to be useful because it means I can come a few times. The flight is only 2.5 hours, so it takes me longer to come from Ahmedabad to Mount Abu than to fly to Ahmedabad. So that's why I tend to come a few times during the season to offer any assistance. Okay. And anyone who wants to drop into Abu Dhabi and see the different culture, you know, welcome to see how Baba works, this magic, anywhere in the world. Because they all belong to him, and he loves them, so he can do magic. Okay, time for traffic control, yeah? To have maybe a few minutes of meditation, and just add a few more vibes towards Dadi Gulzar. As we know, she's not well.